Yes, have a cigar, won't you?
No. Thank you. What an interesting tale. How satisfying to learn the truth behind the Melodium murders after all these years.
Yes, do you see now why we admitted Superintendent Chalker to the Mausoleum Club? Even though, in your eyes, he's not a gentleman.
I think so, but the second condition of membership is still a mystery to me.
Mr. Green, hadn't you better go before it gets too late?
No, it's still light. And besides, you must all have a story to tell. I've only heard three.
Well, we're glad to have stimulated your appetite. Yes. What do you suggest, gentlemen?
Miss Primrose.
Yes. Miss Primrose?
Yes?
May we trouble you?
Certainly.
Woman, this is indeed the queerest club in London.
She has every right to be here, as you shall see. Come, madam, give us your tale.
Oh, my tale. Very well.
Tales from the Mausoleum Club, written by Ian Brown and James Hendry, starring Miranda Richardson, Martin Jarvis, Rosemary Leach, Hugh Lloyd, Brendan Blethyn, Phil Nice, Roy Hudd, Roy Smills, and Rachel Gurney. Episode 4, The Turn of the Knob.
When, as a young girl, I first entered service, I did so with a light heart, for my mother had assured me that after but a short time I would make the acquaintance of some fine young gentleman who would put an end to my dependence on toil. But after 7 years under a series of unelevated positions, such as ladies' companion to a knife thrower and elocution mistress to a firm of navvies, my mother's words began to ring hollow. All I could do was await the completion of the London and North Eastern Railway so that I might hurl myself onto its tracks. Then, one day, at the establishment where I was engaged, a colleague drew my attention to a notice in the Times.
Buy some barley, dear lady. Oh, it's a lovely bunch of...
Hey, Lady Mutt, look at this. Looks like it might be up your street.
Oh, thank you, Queenie. You're so kind. Lady wanted for country position. Knowledge of French essential.
Yes, as long as they don't ask you to do Greek.
Oh, well, there's no mention of Greek. But I suppose I could if they really demanded it.
Oh, dear, I didn't realise you were that hard up.
Yeah, you going to wrap those Wilkes or what?
Apply to 37 Harley Street and ask for Mr. Wright. Mr. Wright! Queenie, this is the man I've been waiting for these 7 years.
Yeah, almost as long as this man's been waiting for his Welks.
Oh, pray pardon, sir. Here are your Welks. But stay while I detach the advertisement. At last, I can bid farewell to this mean and lowly occupation.
Oi, all me Welks is falling out of the hole.
Farewell, Queenie, my humble but honest friend. I hope you may soon retrieve your children from the pawnbroker. And for the rest of you, I'll love you always. Even the dirty ones. Farewell.
Bye. Good luck to you, dearie.
Toffee-nosed cow.
I spent my last 3 halfpence on a hansom cab to Harley Street because I believed that to arrive in style is to create a good impression, whether the journey be 50 miles or, as in this case, 50 yards. As you can see, I was a very stupid young woman. I was ushered into the presence of a young gentleman of a most pleasing and noble countenance. Here was a man I would happily obey, honour, and who knows.
Pith helmet, mosquito net, quinine, a packet of Sturdy's gentleman's requisites. Hey, what?
Your pardon, sir. I have come in answer to your advertisement for...
It's yours. Mango clippers, India primer...
The position...
Yes, the position. Take it. Now, where's my gentleman's folding polo mallet?
But my duties...
Huh? Oh, your duties will be to act as governess to 2 little delightful children.
I see. They shall be travelling with you.
What? What? Who told them? Damn, damn, damn.
Told whom? What do you mean?
Yeah, nothing. A misunderstanding.
Sir?
Yes? What is it, Shreve?
You're handsome, sir.
How true.
Right, then it's time to go.
But, sir, so soon I will need a little time to gather the equipment for such a long journey to Savage Parts.
Look, they may be rough out there, but they do have shops in Swindon.
Swindon? But I had understood you to be going to India.
I am. You're going to Bradsworth in Wiltshire. That's where they live.
Your children?
My children, heaven forfend. No, my late brothers.
So, you are free of attachments, Mr. Wright.
Yes. Free. Or I soon will be.
So, when will you return from your holiday?
My holiday? Oh, a couple of weeks. Oh, Shreve, have you seen my 5-year diary? Anyway, Miss...
Primrose.
Yes, Primrose. Mrs. Stark, the housekeeper, will see to your every need. She has great staying power. Anyway, my cab awaits.
But, sir, where am I to write should anything occur that is outside my competence?
Sydney, Australia. Bye-bye.
Oh, he's left his elephant gun.
Oh, I should hang on to that yourself, miss.
Oh. I journeyed to Bradsworth with joy in my heart and £20 in my purse, which was a lot of money in those days, a quarter of my salary in advance. I had clearly touched my new friend's pocket as much as I believed I had touched his heart. In no time at all, the old house hove into view, a stately Jacobean pile girt about with cedars. A broad lake winked in the sunlight. I blushed and averted my gaze. While in the well-tended gardens, I beheld an ornamental brook, a sundial, and a small white gazebo, which I resolved to look up later in my lady's travelling dictionary. So light was my heart that as the fly drew up at the entrance, I barely noticed a shadow pass across the sun, an owl tearing the throat out of a vole, the withered sapling, a two-headed calf being born in the stables.
Welcome to Bradsworth, miss, if welcome be the word.
Oh, you must be Mrs. Stark.
Yes, miss, I must. And I must be content with my lot.
What a beautiful house.
Do you think so, miss? Yes, so thought they all.
Or?
Thought.
Oh. Are the children waiting for me?
Beautiful house, isn't it, miss?
What a queer woman Mrs. Stark was. The gauntness of her face was matched by her sombre dress. My surprise at her appearance was redoubled when she turned and I noticed a sign on her back reading, "I am a donkey. So kick me hard." With what dark country rituals was Mrs. Stark entangled?
More tea, Miss Primrose?
Oh, yes, please.
Jeremy, go and fetch the kettle.
I will not.
Jeremy.
Not the kettle.
It's your turn.
Oh!
Mrs. Stark, who is that sinister man? Does he live here too? How horrible.
Yes, it is. He is my husband.
I'm sorry, I meant no harm.
Harm? They never meant harm.
I think I'm going to like it here. What is that awful sound?
It started.
I must go and see.
No, wait.
Coming from within this room, Miss Primrose, don't.
Oh, hello. Look, Ruth, it's the new nanny.
Oh, yes. Hello, nanny.
Hello, children. What lovely music.
There's no need to patronise us, nanny.
We know it's dreadful, but we need an arts subject to get into Cambridge.
And also it's very annoying for everyone else in the house.
Children, shouldn't the same person be holding both the bow and the violin?
Oh, well, if you're such an expert expert, Nanny. Perhaps you can show us how it's done.
Now, children, you're getting excited.
Oh, no!
Oh, I think Stark's dropped the kettle.
Yes, that handle can get terribly greasy, can't it?
Mm, but not as greasy as the floor.
I expect he's sliding along the floor towards the Welsh dresser where Mrs. Stark keeps her best crockery.
Oh, Lord.
And I wouldn't be surprised if that nail holding the cauldron on the wall was a bit loose.
On the edge!
Mrs. Stark, you really must clean the floors more carefully in future.
Yes, Mrs. Stark.
Well, before you clear up, perhaps you'd show me to my room.
Your room, miss?
Yes.
Then you're staying?
The governess's room was situated in the east wing overlooking the garden. It was bright and airy and contained little evidence of my predecessor's occupancy, save for an open book, a half-empty bottle of gin, and a complete wardrobe of clothing. Such was the urgency of her departure that she had eschewed the use of the door and had effected her egress by the knotted sheets that yet dangled from the window. An elopement, perhaps. My thoughts fluttered towards the radiance of Mr. Wright. I would gladly have knotted all the linen in India if he had so desired. Before long, it was dark enough for me to undress without scandalizing myself. Then, looking out of the window, I perceived a flickering, dancing glow from the gazebo, a turret or hut erected in a garden so as to command an extensive prospect. I thought no more of the strange lights and slipped between the sheets, having first taken the elementary precaution of unknotting them. The morning sped by. I had never realized that medieval theology could be so fascinating. But then, anything is interesting after 6 hours of differential calculus. As I gathered my resources for the afternoon, walking in the garden and trying to remember everything I knew about the Greek optative, I looked back towards the turrets of Bradsworth and saw, on the west tower, the black figure of a man.
Good heavens! Whoever is that? He's staring at me. Can Mr. Wright have returned so soon? Then there can be only one answer. It's the mad half-brother from some illicit union who they keep locked in a secret room to prevent him from claiming his inheritance. How ridiculous. I have been reading too many Gothic romances. It must be a ghost. But whose? What dark secrets does this ancient pile conceal?
Oi! Help! Let me down!
What manner of being are you? I charge you by God and all his angels, speak!
It's me, you daft bint!
What do you want with me, poor tormented spirit?
Eh? I told you, let me down!
Pardon?
It's Jeremy Stark, the butler! Those flaming penitents have locked me up here while I was cleaning the weathercock. Oh, it happens every time!
What wickedness had this man perpetrated? That two such blameless infants had been driven to incarcerate him thus aloft. I knew then that I must keep one eye on this Stark fellow and the other on my beloved charges. I must get them out of his malefic ambit once I had consulted my dictionary.
Can we go home now, Nanny?
No, Lawrence. We've only just begun.
Oh, but Nanny, picnics are so weedy. We haven't learned anything for hours.
Nonsense. The countryside is teeming with lessons. What do you think, children? Children? Children, where are you?
Don't worry, Nanny.
We're picking some mushrooms for you to have with your tea.
Ah, but you must be very careful, children. Not all mushrooms are edible.
These are perfectly safe. They're Amanita muscaria.
And these are Lepiota crispata.
You'll love them.
It seemed that the insalubrious vapors of the old house had imparted a chill to my stomach, and I was forced to search the darkened kitchen in the hope of finding some baking powder.
Oh, here we are. Oh, that noise! Could it be rats? But wait, a hand at the window. Who is it? Who's there?
Help me!
It was the white figure of a naked man, a sight I never wished to see again. What arcane rituals had found their focus at Bratsworth?
Oi! Let me in, the little horrors!
What horrors? Are there devils abroad?
I don't know about abroad, but there's two in this country. They whipped me clothes while I was in the tub. Hid them in the garden. Let me in, for God's sake.
Not until you find some more decorous mode of presenting yourself, both in your habit and your speech. Good night.
Oh, no! Choppy-nosed cow!
My first duty was to ensure that my darlings were safe. And indeed they were. Peering into their room, I descried two peaceful forms curled up beneath the counterpane. But just as I closed the door to their room, my sight was diverted by a strange vision through the grand window on the staircase. Those lights again. The flickering, dancing glow in the gazebo. Had Stark's demonic ceremony begun once more? Or was it my fancy? No matter. It was clear that I must redouble my efforts to remove this evil man's influence. I would begin by introducing them to children of their own age.
So there we are, all of the spoons in all of the glasses! thank you, children. Now, more magics. Now, we place the top hat over the rabbit, like so, and simsalabim! He has disappeared!
It hasn't, actually.
What?
The table's got a false compartment. You find it inside.
No, it's the magic.
Magic? My hat. Look, we can prove it. Ruth, pass me the crowbar.
No.
Here you are.
No. You rotten little sods, you broke my table. Stop on for
it. Keep the rabbit, Lawrence. It's biology tomorrow.
It's not on, is it?
That night, I retired to my chamber low in spirit. It was then that I remembered the half bottle of gin on the dresser. In no time, things began to fall into place. The flight of my predecessor, the ease with which I attained the position, Mr. Wright's hasty departure from these shores. Seeking relief from the noxious ambiance of the house, I threw open the window.
Those dashed lights again. That settles it. I shall get to the bottom of this once and for all. Bottom.
Emboldened by something I could not name, I tripped across the lawn towards the gazebo without even so much as a dictionary. I was halfway across the moonlit garden when my courage began to falter. A cloud slithered across the sickly moon like a surgeon's knife, the ensuing gloom serving all the more to distinguish that ghostly luminescence which oozed pallidly from that ornamental erection. I summoned up all the valor my womanly frame contained and strode forth.
Now, fortitude, onwards to the gazebo.
Here we are. Now your secret shall be disclosed.
So it's log 3.719 over log 10 theta, all square rooted, yes?
Right. But don't forget to take into account the perihelion.
Oh, yes, of course. And then we divide... Oh, no.
Oh, it's stinkworms.
Oh, I knew it was too good to last.
Children, it's 3:30. Why don't you sleep in bed?
We've got our pillows to do that for us. Sleep's for weeds.
Night's the time for extra astronomy.
Go to bed at once.
No, you go to bed, Nanny. We employ you, remember?
And if you don't do what we say, we'll write to our uncle and tell him about the midnight romps with the naked butler.
Yes.
You wouldn't dare.
Ruth, pass the photographic plates.
See? Oh, now trot along, Nanny, and stop blabbing.
I say, according to these calculations, there should be a ninth planet. Just here.
Oh, Beezer! Let's call it Ruth.
Oh, no. Lawrence would be much better.
No, Ruth.
No, Lawrence.
Ruth.
So you are leaving, miss?
Yes.
Well, you've done better than most.
Have I?
Yes. And as I always say, they'll get their comeuppance in the next world, if not in this.
Excuse me, Miss Primrose.
What?
We're awfully sorry we ragged you last night. It was only a jape.
Not a jape. To threaten to destroy a lady's good name.
Oh, I don't think there's any chance of that.
What do you mean?
Well, our uncle's written to us several times.
Has he?
And he's very impressed with you. I think you may be on the verge of a longer engagement here, if you get my meaning.
What? Oh!
Oh, but look here, Nanny, we're both very sorry. And Lawrence took it all very badly, and he went off last night beastly upset.
Oh, and where is he now?
I don't know. I'm so worried.
You'd better hurry if you want to catch that train, miss.
Train? But I am resolved to stay.
What?
And now we must search the house for poor Lawrence. You take the east wing, Mrs. Stark, and I'll take the west. Hurry now.
Lawrence!
Lawrence!
Lawrence! Oh, Nanny, I'm so frightened. Lawrence was so upset, I'm afraid he was going to do something silly.
Oh, don't worry, sweetest. I'm here, and I'm going to stay here forever and ever and ever.
As a rag doll, suspended from the chandelier by a length of sash cord round his neck, was that prepubescent prodigy that but half an hour earlier I was hoping never to see again. An overturned chair bore witness to his method of dispatch, and, studious to the last, he clutched his little violin in one hand and the bow in the other.
Oh, Lawrence. He must have been such an unhappy child. All he needed was a little love. Oh, to think that I was angry at his pranks. Oh, wait. Mrs. Stark, his arms. They're moving.
Ha ha! April Fool, Primrose. Ha ha ha!
You evil monsters. And it's not even April.
Well, it is according to the Julian calendar.
Which you'd know if you'd studied calendariography.
Yes.
Help me out of this harness, Ruth.
But why? Why do you do all these horrible things? Why?
Well, we wouldn't if we were left alone to get on with the things that really matter.
Like higher maths and cutting up frogs.
Very well. So be it. You shall do as you wish,
And I shall do everything in my power to see that you find peace and quiet.
Oh, good. Well, this afternoon, we're going on a biology field trip.
I've got a better idea, children. An aquatic biology field trip.
Oh, topping!
These are...
Here we are, children. Lawrence can row, and you and I will steer, Ruth.
The boat only has room for two.
Yes, you'll have to stay behind.
Oh, must I?
Yes.
Very well. I'll wave you off. Give them a push, Mr. Stark.
A pleasure, miss.
Take care, children.
You'll find the best specimens in the middle. Goodbye.
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 Oh, don't be so soppy.
We're not going far.
As the boat drew away from the bank, I stood waving with the others, my handkerchief in one hand and in the other, the bung from the bottom of the boat. The three of us turned back towards the house, and as we crossed the well-tended lawns of Bratsworth, we listened to the sweet sounds of nature.
Oh, no, my feet are all wet.
Oh, row faster, you prune, or we'll sink.
Help!
Did you hear something, Mrs. Stark?
Me, miss? Not I.
It must have been a skylark.
Ruth, let me stand on your shoulders.
Ruth, go!
Yes, but you're older than me.
No,
you sound not to arm. You smell anyone.
Shall we have a cup of tea?
What a good idea. Put the kettle on, Stark.
With pleasure.
Tales from the Mausoleum Club, Episode 4, The Turn of the Knob, was written by Ian Brown and James Hendry and starred Miranda Richardson, Martin Jarvis, Rosemary Leach, Hugh Lloyd, Brenda Blethyn, Phil Nice, Roy Hudd, Royce Mills and Rachel Gurney. Music was by Max Harris. The producer was Paul Spencer.